if you notice, not much of a wind chill out there and very, very little threat of frostbite today. What do you think, huh? It's summertime in the city, and the living is, well, it can be miserable when the dew point's up there and the temperature's high. We've had a bit of that, haven't we? Good afternoon, everybody. Stan Turner with you. Happy to have you along here for the ride for the next hour. We have what we consider to be an interesting, I hope entertaining, and I think very timely program for you, yeah? Kyle, before we get into it, how are you doing? Are you keeping cool?
I am trying to, yes.
All right, you're trying to. You did a good job cooling things off here in the studio before I got here. Thank you.
Yes.
Much obliged, my man. Much obliged. We know the air conditioning is working now. I hope I am. Well, folks, it's 12:06. You heard the temperature, 81 degrees, heading for about 87 today. Want to start out here with a question. What do you consider topic A in your daily life? Put another way, what do you talk about most day in and day out? Might it be your job and your work colleagues? Politics and government, especially what puzzles or angers you about our political and government leaders. That certainly is topic A for many folks. Maybe family, maybe health. Those top your daily chat list. Well, yeah, I have an idea there's one other topic that is, shall we call it, topic A plus among most of us. What is it? Well, just look outside your window. That's it. The weather. We talk about it more than we might realize. It's automatic around here. The weather affects us in every which way. Yes, we cannot do anything about it, but we sure do talk about it. And today's a good example. Severe weather blew through last night and left its messy calling card. Same thing last Sunday in the Brainerd Lakes area. Really nasty stuff. And about a week before that, we had another episode. It's on everybody's lip. The weather is, always is. We try to make sense of it, try to figure out why it happens and how to better deal with it. Well, to do that, we need experts who are what I call good explainers, scientists who throw out the jargon and speak plain English. And that's when talking about the weather really makes sense. Well, I'm delighted to say one of the best weather explainers in the business is with us in studio this noon. Mark Seeley is a well-known and well-respected meteorologist and climatologist at the University of Minnesota. He's a popular speaker, a regular fixture on Minnesota Public Radio, and an author. Mark is out with the second edition of his Minnesota Weather Almanac, and that is a book, dear friends, you would be wise to have on your home bookshelf. It is, to my mind, the Bible of Minnesota weather. Welcome back, Mark Seeley. Nice to see you, my friend. Good. Yep, you're okay.
Good to be with you. Good to be with you on this sticky day, Stan.
A little heat. Where are you getting into Stillwater? No easy task today.
No easy day to sweat today, that's for sure.
I'll tell you, the hot weather doesn't keep people away from the St. Croix Valley, does it? My goodness. This is, as I said in the opening here, a very timely moment for us to be talking about the weather. Mark, we've had, what, three significant weather episodes, if we want to call them episodes, hits by severe weather.
Right. Well, we were, you'll recall, Stan, we were blessed with a glorious July 4th here in Minnesota, but then on the 5th and 6th, we got our first dose of severe weather.
Right.
Then again, as you said, last Sunday on the 12th, and then again last night on the 17th. And it's been widely scattered, but it has been damaging severe weather from the standpoint of high winds in places. Most notably, of course, the derecho, the straight-line winds from last Sunday.
Right.
And then although a number of observers late last night reported straight line winds over 60 miles an hour, and a lot of trees were snapped off, and there was a lot of difficulty, widely scattered areas. And then, of course, pretty good doses of precipitation. We have a number of observers in the state now that have already had over 5 and 6 inches of rainfall, and we're barely halfway through the month.
Mark, might we have had both rotating winds, that is tornadoes, and straight-line winds last night? Watertown, I think the National Weather Service, at least its radar, showed a tornado.
Yes, I think they're attempting to confirm that in a survey. But yes, indeed, we had a complex go through that delivered a lot of straight line winds. But you're right, around Watertown, there was indications on the Doppler radar system of rotating winds, which, of course, would be a tornado.
The early line information is that wind gusts, so this is last night, overnight, and early this morning, wind gusts up to 70 miles per hour reported in St. Paul, Golden Valley, New Brighton, Maple Grove, Richfield, and Lakeville. Tree limbs snapping and all the rest. And an interesting feature, Mark, of this, the backside of the storm. Once the storm, the front of it anyway, was into western Wisconsin, those of us in the Twin Cities, including my house, the winds were kicking up again and really strong. So there were some, I don't know what you call them technically, but backside winds of significant velocity.
Yeah, it was an interesting complex. And unlike what's happened to us, say, last week, for example, this backside, this air mass on the backside, hasn't brought that much of a relief yet in terms of a fall in the dew points and a reduction in humidity. We got a minor reduction because, after all, we were up about a 70 to 72 dew point last night.
Ooh.
But today, see, we're still in the mid-60s. We haven't yet fallen off.
Dew point.
We haven't yet fallen off into the 50s, or the drier air hasn't reached Minnesota. Now, it will reach Minnesota tomorrow. Tomorrow will feel Mother Nature's natural air conditioning.
Oh, good.
As that dew point drops down into the 50s. But, yeah, it was a complex system. I might also add, Stan, that those winds hung together. The winds associated with that complex hung together, and they went on much further east of us as well overnight. Thankfully, the other maybe silver lining of last night's storm was that it was rapidly moving. So, in other words, it didn't linger like 3 or 4 or 5 hours, anything like that, because it was moving across the Minnesota landscape fairly rapidly.
Mark, is it unusual for us to get kicked, as it were, in the backside once the most of the storm front has passed through, to get kicked on the backside?
Yes, that is an unusual storm structure, Stan. It has happened in the past. Certainly we had episodes like this in 1977 and 1983 and others that I've written about in my book.
Yes.
But it is an unusual character to have those backside winds so strong.
Okay, and of course there's been tree damage, other property damage. Thank goodness, no reports, at least as of right now, of any injuries, and certainly no deaths, so thank goodness for that. That's from last night and early this morning. And I was staying up with that storm. I've got a lot of big trees around my house, and frankly, I'm getting more worried with every storm. I don't have it in me to cut the trees down, but I seriously thought about it this morning. You know, it's tough, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I live in a neighborhood of St. Paul over, St. Anthony Park, actually. It's over west of the fairgrounds.
Right.
Kind of a heavily wooded neighborhood, and we got a lot of old trees, and I couldn't help but notice this morning, not big branches, but there were sure a lot of small branches down all over the place.
Right.
Yeah.
Mark, let's back up a week. Last Sunday, my goodness, the week has gone past. The governor was up in the Brainerd Lakes area yesterday assessing the damage to see if the damage is significant enough for Minnesota to qualify for state and federal disaster relief. We know for sure that there were widespread power outages. Last Sunday, straight line winds is what we're talking about up there.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that complex was, again, getting back to a term I used earlier, Stan, derecho, which is Spanish for straight ahead. But that complex was very visible on the radar system as a very strong, what we call, bow echo. It moved across the landscape with remarkable speed and brought winds, anywhere from 60, I think, estimated maybe up to 100 miles an hour, just sheared off some trees, not just blew down some maybe more weak-rooted trees, but sheared off the tops of certain trees, caused a lot of damage. Left a swath, by the way, maybe up to, maybe as much as 140 or more miles. So quite a wide swath of damage, that storm. Thankfully, the derecho, by the way, for listeners in Minnesota, you're probably already aware of this, are infrequent. You know, they only visit the United States probably less than 10 per year across the entire landscape.
They always seem to be here, though.
And the last significant one we had in Minnesota, for example, was 2008. And then the last significant one before that was the famous Boundary Waters one in July of 1999. So at least for the sake of the damage and what they can inflict, they're very widely spaced in time, at least up here in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm. Some of the resorts in the Brainerd Lake area, of course, are still struggling to get back up and running. I think Kavanaugh's southwest corner, near southwest corner of Gull Lake, finally is opening.
Right.
But not so Madden's yet, and Cragen's, I think, and Grandview. Grandview may have lost up to 200 mature trees up there. That's on the northern shore of Gull Lake. The owner operator up there, and it's been in his family for years, so they've never seen anything like this in all those years.
Right. And of course, you know, when it's that widespread, it's that prolific, it takes a long time. You don't just clean that up in a long weekend or something. It plays out. And what's distressing, of course, for the resort industry is when you lose power like that, and it's not just a matter of hours, but it's a matter of days. That really makes it difficult.
So that was a tough hit for all concerned, no doubt about it. Again, fortunately, no deaths. Haven't heard any injuries to speak of. They had it, you know, again, thank goodness for the warning system that you and your colleagues put out these days. Unlike not so many years ago, we just didn't have that benefit, did we?
No, we sure didn't, but my hat's tipped to the Weather Service. All three of those severe weather episodes, the 5th and 6th, the 12th, and then last night, the 17th, they handled those, and they did a great job in all of those. They're using all the tools, the Doppler radar system. They're using the spotter networks. They're using all the tools as effectively as they can.
Mark, in your book, and this we are talking about the second edition of your fine Minnesota Weather Almanac. This has been a very, very popular volume. I know it's doing very well, and it deserves to. This is published by the Minnesota Historical Society Press, folks. It's at any bookstore. Our favorite Valley bookstore right here in Stillwater has always stocked well with your book, Mark. You make a very interesting, acronym here, maybe MAD, M-A-D.
Oh.
We are afflicted with something you've coined. This phrase, meteor MAD, what does that stand for? Meteorological affected disorder. We suffer from MAD. What is that?
Yeah, I'm not the only one, but it's kind of an obsession with the weather, to the extent that the symptoms are the first thing in the morning. You want to know what the weather's going to be. So if you don't have a NOAA weather radio, maybe you're watching the Weather Channel, or you're tuning in for what the latest is, or you're going on the internet to see what the latest is. And then, of course, during this time of year, Stan, the other symptom of MAD is when Minnesota is under what we call a severe weather watch by the Storms Prediction Center.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are on watch all day long. In fact, some I know bookmark the Storm Prediction Center website because they want to be alerted if something does develop. They want to know where it is and where it's going right away.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We're weather-obsessed in a good way, aren't we? Hmm? Would that be fair?
I think that's part of our resilience. That's part of our resilience in coping with this environment.
Survival skill might be another way of putting that. You also note, we are a citizenry that describes our personality and the weather using the same adjectives, like, yeah, that guy or that weather system is dull, gloomy, drippy, sunny. Okay, you're bright and the weather is refreshing, but he's stuffy and blustery and foggy. So it works for both people and weather, doesn't it?
I think my own personality has been described with those terms from time to time.
No, bright and knowledgeable and fun and learned. That's the way I would describe you. I don't know if that'll work for a weather system or not. But let's talk about, we've talked about tornadoes already, and boy, the time is flying here. Seems to me, Mark, I've been in the news business a long time,
sure,
and I've talked to you frequently. Thank you for making time for us newsies.
You bet.
And you're always available, and thank you. I recall it was 2010, so 5 years ago.
Right.
We had a bumper crop. That was the year, wasn't it, of tornadoes?
That's right. That's the one and only time we've led the nation in tornadoes, Stan. We had 113.
113 in one season?
Documented tornadoes.
In this state, in Minnesota.
Right. Now, fortunately, a high percentage of those, I think 70 or more percent, maybe even 80 or more percent, were not of the high-grade intensity. You know, they were EF0 or EF1 or something like that, winds of 100 miles an hour or less. Unfortunately, one of them, though, was the storm that devastated Wadena, and the Wadena school system suffered massive losses from that. And it took them Not surprisingly, it took them a number of years to fully recover from that.
What was going on meteorologically that would produce that many tornadoes in one state in one season?
Well, we had a mixture of, we had widespread variability over the Minnesota landscape in terms of moisture conditions. So we had inherent landscape difference where it was dry versus where it was wet. And then the mixing of the atmosphere that year, the jet stream was draped across northern Minnesota for a good deal of the summer. Instead of being far in retreat up into Canada, mm-hmm. like we commonly see in the summer months, it was draped across the Minnesota landscape. And so when we did get severe weather development, a lot of times the trajectory was right across the Minnesota landscape.
Mark Seeley, if there is such a thing as an average number of tornadoes in a season in the state, what would that be?
Well, in the modern era, mm-hmm. we use a number that's in the 40s, anywhere from 42 to 46 in the modern era. If we go back in time before all the detection technology was deployed, we only documented about maybe 20 per season. Mm-hmm. Then as we deployed the radar and the spotter networks, that jumped up in the late decades of the 20th century to about 35 or 36. And now in the modern era, we get somewhere around in the low to mid-40s is pretty typical.
It sounds to me that as our spotting network gets better, our forecasting more sophisticated, we're simply spotting more or detecting more tornadoes than we used to. So maybe there are not more tornadoes happening. We're just aware of them. Is that
right? Okay. All the National Weather Service scientists are quite aware that embedded in any trend analysis across our state or any other state is the detection technology and the spotter networks that we've used. And I'd have to say that in the modern era now, there is probably not a tornado in Minnesota that goes undetected. You know, its signature is mm-hmm. picked up somewhere. Mm-hmm. Even in the remote areas of northern Minnesota, you know, the overlapping radar systems, the satellite systems, and the observational networks we have now, there's hardly any that escape our attention.
I'm guessing right now our friend at the National Weather Service, Chan Hassan, Todd Krause, I would guess he's out at Watertown right now checking out that reported tornado last night.
By the way, Todd's been, as you know, Stan, Todd's been at that. He's been our warning coordination meteorologist for not years, but, mm-hmm. but decades.
Mm-hmm.
And he's quite an expert at it, so I'm sure everyone is kind of awaiting for the official word on that.
Indeedy. It's in good hands when we have people like that out there doing the field research. Mark Seeley with us, meteorologist, climatologist at the U of M, author of now the second edition of Minnesota Weather Almanac. You need to get that book, folks. We'll be right back.
The 1920s were a golden age for baseball and custom-tailored clothing. That golden age is back at Jaime's Haberdashery in St. Paul. Jaime's Haberdashery helps men look and feel their best with high-quality clothing cut and styled just for them. Make each visit uniquely yours with hats, suits, casual wear, and accessories. Visit their barbershop for a hot lather shave. It's the golden age again at Jaime's Haberdashery, 400 St. Peter Street in downtown St. Paul. Online at jaimes.com.
The Stillwater area is most fortunate to be the home of Valley Bookseller, located right on Main Street in downtown. If you or anyone you know likes to read, this is the bookstore for you. Books, book clubs, book specials, book events, and more books. Check out their website at valleybookseller.com to see events, special sales, and staff recommendations. Call 651-430-3385. Valley Bookseller. Great books. Great people. 217 Main Street North, Stillwater.
Wolf Beer in the Bottle isn't just another bottled beer. Why? Remove the cork to find out. Yes, that's real cork. Now pour. Taste. The Strong Golden is a Belgian-style ale featuring local honey from the valley, chamomile, and rose hips. Are you ready to enjoy? Go to wolfbrewing.com and click on Beer Finder. Then ask for Wolf's. Stillwater's original craft beer. Wolf Brewing Company, Stillwater, Minnesota.
Cue up the fireworks. It's an explosion of flavor all month long at Wayback Burgers.
Grab our Burger of the Month, the All-American Burger with sautéed onions, bacon, fried jalapenos, and horseradish cheddar cheese. And top it off with a star-spangled milkshake made with real Pop Rocks candy. It's a combo so good, you'll be seeing stars and stripes. Visit WaybackBurgers.com for locations and to order online. Wayback Burgers. Find your way back.
We are back. You know, the cliche, the adage, everybody talks about the weather, nobody does anything about it. Well, we try to, through the medium of great people like Mark Seely, a meteorologist and climatologist at the University of Minnesota. Mark does so much to explain this thing we call weather, why it happens, how it happens, what we need to know about it to keep ourselves not only more knowledgeable, but safer, too. Mark, thank you for being with us. We appreciate it. You're heard every week on NPR Radio, and you're heard on KLBB from time right here.
You bet.
Thank you for coming
to be here.
Thank you, my friend, and we're happy to have you here. Before we plunge back into our discussion here, let me take a second to read the weather forecast for the metro area as propagated here by the National Weather Service out of Chanhassen here. For the balance of today, partly sunny, a high is going to be a scorcher again today, 87 degrees. Are we looking for high dew points again today, Mark? What do you think?
I don't think we'll get out of the 60s today.
Okay.
Then we'll tail off tomorrow.
Great. Speaking of, well, first of all, tonight, partly cloudy, we'll have an overnight low of 63. Now tomorrow, mostly sunny with a high near 83, Mark. So a more comfortable day for us tomorrow. Okay. On Monday, a 30% chance of rain and thunderstorms, mostly sunny to start out the new week, a high near 85. Tuesday, again, sunshine, high near 80. 80 again on Wednesday, Thursday 81, and 84 on Friday. So we're settling down into the lower range of the 80-degree mark and lower dew points, I would hope, through the week.
Right. Okay. Bearing in mind, you know, our average for this time of year, Stan, is right around 84 degrees every day anyway.
We're right in there then, aren't we, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
Mark Seely, before we move off the subject of tornadoes, you have so many interesting facts in your book, both in your original and your second edition of Minnesota Weather Almanac. And folks, you can find this any good bookstore. One of these is a table showing documented tornadoes by county in Minnesota from 1950 through last year. So this is right up to date. What puzzles me or fascinates me, county by county, let's say Hennepin County, this is over the course of 1950 to 2014, Hennepin County, 31 tornadoes, Washington County, 22, and the county in between them, Ramsey, only 8. How can that be? Ramsey's stuck right between
these.
Well,
it might purely be a function of what size they are on the geographic puzzle.
Ramsey's a smaller
Ramsey's
county for sure.
One of the smaller Minnesota counties. Yeah. I'm sure that's got a lot to do with
it. Okay. Smaller target, in other words, huh?
Right.
Okay. Let's talk. You mentioned this a bit ago, and we really need to talk about it. It is a phenomenon that I think is little understood and is really a weather maker around here. We're talking about the jet stream.
Right.
This phenomenon was not really well known. I've talked to some bomber crews from World War II. The navigators, they were right on course going into targets in Germany, but it turns out they were being blown over known anti-aircraft batteries and getting shot out of the sky because of the jet stream, which they didn't know about. They said all of our calculations were right.
Right.
But we didn't know about this river of air up there about 20,000, 25,000 feet.
Yeah. And yeah. It still puzzles us. In fact, there's a paper that just came out this week that's a sort of review about our knowledge of the polar jet stream in the Northern Hemisphere and how it behaves. And the paper carefully points out that we still have a lot of holes or gaps in our knowledge about that behavior. It's got a lot to do with the difference between the mid-latitude air masses, the quantity of heat and water vapor that's contained in those, such as, say, the air that generates over the U.S. continent, and then the high polar air masses, which tend to be a lot colder and drier. And it fluctuates quite a bit in terms of not only its geographic position, that is, what band of latitude it's operating in, but it also fluctuates a lot in terms of its orientation. And we in Minnesota know that quite well because when we experience sharply cool air out of the north, that's usually because the jet stream has dipped and allowed the air masses from high latitude to penetrate down into Minnesota and bring us that drier, cooler air.
Does air ride the currents of the jet stream? Do they ride in on the jet stream?
The air masses, as they cross the continents and oceans, are kind of steered by the orientation. We call that kind of the highway that steers the streams of air aloft and therefore streams what's below it in terms of the cloud systems and the heat and moisture and things like that.
A few days ago, Mark Seeley, we were all gasping and choking on forest fire smoke coming down from Saskatchewan and Alberta, Canada. And what if anything, did the jet stream have to do with that?
Yeah, that's steering the air from northern Canada and even Alaska, for that matter, and bringing that down over Minnesota, because we've had a lot of what we call northwesterly flow aloft that has steered that air down. And so we've certainly been subject to, we've had a lot of air quality alerts, Stan. You know about those.
Oh, yes.
Had a lot of air quality alerts due to the amount of smoke in the atmosphere. And the other thing is we need to stay on the alert for that, especially those of you that suffer from any respiratory ailments, because as we migrate even deeper into the summer, the fire weather season in Western Canada as well as Alaska is not expected to abate much. They're in the middle of one of their hottest, driest summers in history.
Wow.
And so until they get some relief up there, the threat of wildfires looks like it's going to remain for quite a while.
And the jet stream, it is something of a factor then in carrying these?
Absolutely. It's an an important factor for knowing where the plumes and where all that air is going to go.
Has the jet stream been doing strange things in the wintertime here in recent years? It seems like it has.
Yeah, we've, in fact, for 2 years running now, we've seen the jet stream, instead of transitioning to a different trajectory or a different state, if you will, every few days, we've seen a behavior that it locks, what we call locks into a certain pattern that persists for weeks. And so we've seen more of that behavior. Now, we don't yet have a good explanation for that. We don't know why it's doing that, but sometimes we, for example, in the middle of the country here for almost 2 years now, Minnesota and Wisconsin and the upper Midwest, we've been exposed to more cool air than either east or west of us because the trajectory of the jet stream is more frequently drawing that high latitude air down over us rather than the western states or the eastern states.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Remember the jet stream, folks. It's a weather maker. It really does affect how we live and try to survive in this area. I wanted to ask you, and I'm just going to back up a minute, on the subject of tornadoes, because it's very much with us. Tornadoes have been recorded in this state all the way from March into November, I believe. Is that right?
Yes. So, the only months we've never recorded tornadoes on the calendar are December, January, February.
Wow. So we're in it, I mean, theoretically in it till into November.
Right.
Mark, time of day. Is there a particular time of day when tornadoes are more likely to strike?
Well, we all know that the sun, the heat of the sun combined with the latent heat, what we call the heat contained in the water vapor in the atmosphere, are the two mechanisms that fuel convective thunderstorm development. Those are at maximum from the late afternoon to the early evening. So I guess it's logical then that we see a spike in the frequency of severe weather and, of course, the frequency of tornadoes from about 4 in the afternoon to about 8 in the evening. So if we look at that historically, that's the time frame of the day that most of them occur.
Mm-hmm. Some terms if we could go over, and we've used a couple of them already. First of all, heat index. What do we mean when we're talking about heat index, Mark?
Well, the heat index is important. It's important to understand for health purposes. That's the National Weather Service tool for assessing how the combination of water vapor in the atmosphere, we call dew point, for example, and temperature affect your human physiology, affect your body comfort, your respiration, your perspiration, in some cases how fast you breathe, how fast your heart rate is, and things like that. And so using the heat index by the standards in our area, whenever the heat index is expected to approach 100 degrees, the combination of water vapor and air temperature is going to make it feel like 100 degrees, the Weather Service will put out a heat advisory. And then if it's going to be more than 105 or, say, up to 110, they'll put out a excessive heat warning, which basically is their way of saying it's a dangerous situation today, a risk to your health, to be out very long and let yourself get dehydrated or let yourself get too much sun, and you could be subject to some real severe health problems.
Mark, I noticed you didn't use the word humidity in the explanation of heat index. How does that factor in?
Well, in some areas, the humidity can work just as well, but it's really,
I get confused.
Really, for our human physiology, we react more to what the specific water content of the atmosphere is as opposed to what the relative content of water. See, you could say it's 100% humidity, but if it's 50 degrees outside, that's not going to cause you a lot of stress. Whereas if it's say, 85 degrees outside, but the dew point is 75, that's a lot of water vapor. And that's going to cause you some stress outside.
Another term, heat lightning. Is there such a thing?
Not really. I mean, that's an old term that goes back, oh my goodness, well over 100 years to refer to when it is a hot summer day, sometimes you can observe lightning way off on the horizon somewhere. Mm-hmm. It's got nothing to do with the heat. It just means that there's thunderstorm activity, but it's way away from you.
Okay. How about urban heat island? When we're talking about tornadoes, one of the old wives' tales is, well, tornadoes will usually steer away from heavily populated urban areas because that's a urban heat island. What's the truth?
No, we need to dismiss that an urban heat island is going to, totally negate the probability of having a tornado across the city. The urban heat island does greatly amplify the heat content of the urban environment, and as we all know here, we have a pronounced urban heat island in the Twin Cities. We have warmer nights, for example, typically than the outer lying areas. The heat index in the city itself tends to get higher than it does in the surrounding areas, but it does not prevent the formation of severe storms or tornadoes, and we need to be as careful and pay just as much attention to that as if we lived anywhere else in Minnesota.
Well, let's just consider May 6th, 1965.
Right.
Pretty good case in point.
Right.
Can you reprise that one for us to briefly
widespread,
summarize?
Widespread tornadoes rampant across the Twin Cities area, notably the western Minneapolis and up in northern Minneapolis and through there. A family of tornadoes went through, many of them F4 intensity. That's up around 200-mile-an-hour winds. And the Weather Service was, along with the local media, was doing tremendous service by warning everybody ahead of time. But even with all those warnings, it did probably the most destructive damage to the Twin Cities of any tornado outbreak in history.
So much for the myth of urban heat island keeping tornadoes away. I think there were, 6 confirmed tornadoes
and
14 deaths May 6, 1965, right in the Twin Cities. Another term, dog days of
dog
summer.
Days.
That's in your book, Minnesota Weather Almanac, second edition.
Yeah.
That's a term people hear, they use, and I'm not quite sure. So that's when the dogs start running into the lake to cool off. Well, not quite.
Or associated with the dog star astronomically.
True.
And so we get into late July and August when the dog star is dominant in the skyline. But those days are, day after day. If we're going to have, for example, if we're going to have a heat wave stand in any given year, those are the most likely days that we will. Day after day, we'll have oppressive heat, may last for quite a period of time. And I remember baseball players growing up, baseball players talking about the dog days because, play afternoon ball games, or back in those days, my goodness, if you had an afternoon doubleheader.
In wool uniforms.
Yeah, holy cow, did you need a lot of water just to get through that?
Yeah, we're in dog days now, I think. It's mid-July, isn't it, through September and in this state?
Right through that period.
Rough. So it's what, the constellation Sirius, is that the dog? dog?
Yes, I believe that's right.
Okay. Yeah. It's in your book, so I know it's got to be right. Okay, so there you are, Dog Days. We're at 12:40 right now. Going to take one more break, coming back with our friend, our great explainer of things weather, Mark Seeley, meteorologist, climatologist, author of Minnesota Weather Almanac, second edition. It's out there for your not only your perusal, but your purchase, I hope. It's something you really need to have at home and read it. It is fantastic. And there are some fun little quizzes you've put in there, too, some definitions of interesting terms, and it's a joy to read.
We've tried to put some of the best of the state fair weather quizzes in there.
And you've succeeded, my friend. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Timeless tastes and timeless ingredients are why people ask for Wolf's. So which Wolf's will you ask for? The Strong Golden Belgian Style Ale is light-bodied, yet seductively strong warmer. Maybe it's the Berlin-style Weiss, the sour wheat ale that's dubbed the Champagne of the North. Or perhaps it's the German-style ale, Weizenbach, the dark wheat ale brewed to Bach strength. Whichever, make sure you ask for Wolf's. Stillwater's original craft beer. Wolf Brewing Company, Stillwater, Minnesota.
The St. Paul Saints are pleased to announce tailgating, only $8 Lafayette Road, and the symbol, the street, formerly known as Prince. Still known as Prince.
Saints baseball returns tomorrow with games against Winnipeg and Lincoln. Don't miss Treasure Island Saturday, Metropolitan State University Monday, or Mississippi Market Trivia Tuesday.
Fun is good at CHS Field, St. Paul's front porch. Tickets at saintsbaseball.com.
The Stillwater area is most fortunate to be the home of Valley Bookseller, located right on Main Street in downtown. If you or anyone you know likes to read, this is the bookstore for you. Books, book clubs, book specials, book events, and more books. Check out their website at valleybookseller.com to see events, special sales, and staff recommendations. Call 651-430-3385. Valley Bookseller. Great books. Great people. 217 Main Street North, Stillwater.
The 1920s were a golden age for baseball and custom-tailored clothing. That golden age is back at Jaime's Haberdashery in St. Paul. Jaime's Haberdashery helps men look and feel their best with high-quality clothing cut and styled just for them. Make each visit uniquely yours with hats, suits, casual wear, and accessories. Visit their barber shop for a hot lather shave. It's the golden age again at Jaime's Haberdashery, 400 St. Peter Street in downtown St. Paul. Online at Jaime's.com.
We are back, jumping in here. This is a fast-flying hour here. It always goes with warp speed when Mark Seeley is with us. Mark, of course, the fine meteorologist, climatologist at the University of Minnesota. And again, I keep mentioning, for good reason, his second edition of Minnesota Weather Almanac. You'll be delighted to look at that. Mark, got to ask you this. Does a given summer's weather, let's just take this one, does it in any way foretell what kind of autumn and maybe winter we're going to have? So far this summer we've had a lot of rain, a lot of heat, but I don't know if it's average or not, but is that any sort of a marker as to what we can expect in autumn?
Well, myself, along with so many of the scientists that I've worked with over the years, Stan, have tried every kind of form of serial correlation we can, and one season is not a good predictor of the next. Especially so in Minnesota, especially because our weather is so highly variable that it can... We still have to remember, for example, the year 1936. 1936 arguably the coldest cold wave in Minnesota history in February of 1936, minus 55 in northern Minnesota and wind chills of minus 70. And then July of 1936, the worst heat wave in the
same year.
In the same year, yeah.
How can that be? In your book, and again, this just, my jaw drops every time I look at this number. There is, and you pretty much alluded to it or referred to it here, there has been a 175-degree range, temperature range in this state.
Right.
From the hottest to the coldest. Folks, this is one of the rarest places on Earth where that's the case,
yeah,
isn't it?
That's a marker. That's
175 degrees.
You don't find that too many places in the world.
Thank goodness for other places, and here we sit with it. And talk about a wild temperature swing. 1936. How could that have been? The hottest and the coldest.
Well, back in the 30s, in fact, the statistics of measurement in the Minnesota landscape, much of the U.S. as well, in the 30s. is still some of the most highly variable that's ever been measured in history, and yet hasn't been fully explained. We do know that we were in the midst of an agricultural transition. We had put the plow to the soil back in the 30s and torn up much of the native prairie and gone to a lot of other kinds of things. So we were looking at a disturbed landscape, and we were also looking at a highly disturbed atmosphere, and the combination of the two generated some real wild, huge variability in the climate of the 1930s.
Fast forward to the summer of 2015 right now. How are the crops looking, Mark?
Wonderful. In fact, we've talked about this a lot in the last 2 weeks, Dan, and in fact, by all assessments, Minnesota agriculture is the blue ribbon state this year. We are looking at crop conditions in our state that surpass those of most other states around us. We're really looking at very, very good crops so far. We've had the right amounts of moisture. We have good soil stored moisture right now, so that if we do go dry, we probably have enough of a surplus to carry us. We've looked at good crop progress and good crop health. And so far, we have not been adversely plagued by any major disease or insect outbreaks. So it's been very good so far.
Blue ribbon, you say, huh? That sounds good.
A blue ribbon year.
That's great, great. Lake Superior, we all love that big body of water. We call it our inland sea, our great unsalted ocean. Call it what you will. It's a magnet for all of us. We love to go up there and see it. Lake Superior, it is the biggest of the Great Lakes, the coldest, the deepest.
Yes, absolutely.
And it does affect our weather in Minnesota and Wisconsin, doesn't it?
It surely does, and it still does. It's a great natural air conditioning in the summer whenever we get the easterly winds off there. It's a cloud producer in some cases, also under the right conditions. It suppresses, now it's a protection mechanism when it comes to severe weather, because the cooler waters of Lake Superior tend to suppress convective thunderstorm development, so that oftentimes, and we've seen this over and over again in Minnesota history, we'll get, say, severe or strong thunderstorms develop over the land portion of the landscape and migrate across. But as it gets out towards Lake Superior, it tends to dissipate or die off.
Does the lake generate its own weather in a way?
Yes, it's a huge modifier. It generates its own weather. High incidence of autumn and spring season fogs, for example, because of all the water vapor coming off Lake Superior. And tends to moderate the climate quite a bit, so that you don't see the temperature variation along that part of the Minnesota landscape that you see in, say, the western prairie part of the Minnesota landscape.
The gales of November, that sends a chill literally and figuratively up a lot of spines. You don't want to be out on Lake Superior in that month. The witches, the winds, and all the rest. And, of course, what comes to mind, the great tragedy, Edmund Fitzgerald.
Yes, we have the November 10th, 1975 anniversary. We have the 40th anniversary of the Edmund Fitzgerald coming up this autumn. I'm sure there'll be special activities at the Split Rock Lighthouse, which has the annual Edmund Fitzgerald Day. And then the city of Duluth often hosts the Gales in November conference to talk about the weather of the Great Lakes. And the month of November is indeed a spike in all of the historical weather events that have occurred on the lake, particularly those where there's been losses of ships and crew. There's a real spike in the month of November. And so that'll be a 40th anniversary. I'm sure that'll be quite a big, that'll get a lot of public attention this autumn.
It will. Will you be up there for the Gales of
November? I think I will be for at least one or two occasions, because there's plenty to talk about in remembering that storm from 40 years ago. And, you know, immortalized in the Gordon Lightfoot song, which is still known by most everybody throughout the region.
The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald. It's a classic. Let's go back a few decades before. It's hard to believe. What's the anniversary coming? 40th?
40th anniversary.
Okay, well, three, 4 decades before that, we have another weather tragedy in the state of Minnesota, the Armistice Day Blizzard.
Armistice Blizzard, 1940. So 75th anniversary of that is coming up in November as well. Probably two aspects to that noteworthy. We lost 54 Minnesota citizens in that blizzard, one of the worst in Minnesota history. Also, one of the worst forecasting performances by the National Weather Service. Now, that was 1940. That preceded the date where we actually had National Weather Service forecasters assigned to Minnesota, because the forecast for that storm was issued from the Chicago office.
The Commerce Department, too, wasn't it? Back then, it wasn't even a weather department,
well,
or interior department.
Yeah, and so anyway, the bottom line is we'll have that 75th anniversary. I think the interesting thing associated with that this autumn is it'll give us an opportunity to hear from some of our Minnesota citizens who actually lived through that storm.
Indeed. My father's no longer with us, but he was in that storm. He went to work that day in downtown Minneapolis. That day was a day hunters were out, weren't
right.
they, on the river bottoms in short-sleeve shirts.
That's
the
right.
The very temperate, moderate day. And as the day wore on, Mark, it got colder and blustery, and it turned into a full-scale blizzard. My father left work early, as a lot of people did, downtown. And mind you, the roads were really bad back then, going out to Medicine Lake out by Plymouth. And by the time it was 20, 30 miles away from home, he couldn't see anymore. He abandoned the car and went from tree to tree, and somehow, some way, I don't think a divine hand, he found his little home. My mother was waiting. My mother pried open the door because the snow had banked up against the door. She opened it and did not recognize this figure who was covered in ice and snow, her husband, my father.
My word.
Grace of God. But how many died in that storm?
54.
54.
Yeah,
he could easily have been one of them. So
54. Yeah. That was the other character to that storm was what we call, in the modern era, we call that sudden onset. In other words, we went from very benign conditions, and once the storm hit us, it hit us suddenly, and it hit us dramatically, and conditions became really very dangerous in some cases within minutes, and certainly within an hour or two. If you were in the outdoors, you were in very serious trouble.
Perhaps the most famous disaster tied to weather in Minnesota history is the one that most people have never heard of, and that is the so-called Sea Wing disaster on Lake Pepin. We just passed the 125th anniversary. It was last Monday, July 13th. It happened in 1890. Mark,
right.
You do refer to it in your book. Can you capsulize it?
Right. Well, there's three parts to that, Stan. July 13th, 1890. First and foremost, that day brought the Lake Jarvis tornado, which killed some St. Paul residents on Lake Jarvis. Then it devastated Newport, Minnesota, down along the river, and really all but destroyed the town of Newport, Minnesota. And then the same thunderstorm complex overturned the Sea Wing on Lake Pepin.
Which was an excursion boat.
And loaded.
Loaded.
Absolutely
215
loaded.
People.
Right.
And a barge was tethered to it as well with more people.
With
on
even more people.
Right.
And onset downburst wind overturned the vessel, and I think we lost 98 people. Still, to this day, the worst boating disaster in Minnesota history.
That is one that we talked about on this very show last week, the Sea Wing disaster. Frederick Johnson has done yeoman service of putting together the story of that tragedy on Lake Pepin. It's the subject of a book that has been published by the Goodhue County Historical Society. And Fred, again, deserves your attention. This disaster, again, is known by so few people. With the passage of time, it's almost been erased from popular memory.
Yes, I would agree with you entirely. In Minnesota history, it's one of the lesser-known stories, but it's a very significant one that was a bookmark for that whole generation, really, as far as boating and then boating safety. You know, we have a lot of bodies of water in Minnesota that are large bodies of water that we really do need to keep track of the weather when we're out on those bodies of water.
Right. We should say Lake Pepin, where the Sea Wing disaster took place. That's actually a bulge in the Mississippi River, isn't it? Not a lake per se as we know it.
Okay. That's right. Mm-hmm. That's
okay.
Right.
El Nino and La Nina, a couple of weather phenomena we hear about from time to time, and they do influence our weather here. Could you briefly tell us what that is, please?
El Nino, La Nina is a behavior in the equatorial Pacific Ocean that's been known for a number of years. A Norwegian meteorologist, Jacob Bjerknes, was one of the people that wrote about it the most, good Lord, more than 50 years ago. When the equatorial Pacific Ocean waters get extraordinarily warm, they affect the atmosphere, and they affect the behavior in the atmosphere to the extent of the jet stream and where the air masses go, where the precipitation goes. Extraordinarily cold conditions are called La Niña, and the little girl in Spanish, El Niño, the little boy. We are currently in an El Niño episode. We currently have El Niño in play in the equatorial Pacific. As such, if it is still in play this autumn and winter, everyone is going to lean towards a milder than normal winter in Minnesota, because that is what is correlated with the Minnesota weather pattern.
A couple of years ago, you and I were talking about La Niña, and what we thought was going to happen didn't come to pass, did it?
Right.
Not always a predictor.
Sometimes it is. It's not a perfect, it's not a 100% correlation, but it's nevertheless a statistical tool that the Weather Service uses from time to time. This current El Niño episode, by the way, is expected to persist well into the year, so it may very well influence our outlook for the autumn and for the winter season.
Mild, I'm thinking of, huh?
Yes.
Maybe. Oh, that would be nice if it comes to pass. Mike and Mark, in our closing minutes here, I just want to mention something that is politically charged, called climate change. We
yes.
can spend 3-5 hours on that one. There is such a thing, and what's it done to Minnesota?
Well, the entire last chapter of the book, the Minnesota Weather Almanac Second Edition, is devoted to that. And what I try to show in that chapter is all the overwhelming evidence that indeed does show that our climate has changed. It's changed in the frequency of certain extremes. It's changed in the magnitude of certain extremes. In just the last 10 years, Stan, we've set over 140 statewide records in our climate database, which is a phenomenal pace. And so we need to pay, my bottom line is we need to pay attention to it, because the numbers we measure are telling us it is changing.
Are we getting hotter or colder? Are we getting wetter or drier?
We're getting warmer and we're getting wetter.
Mm-hmm.
And we're seeing more extremes. Those are the fundamentals of the climate change signature in Minnesota.
And don't forget, folks, talk about extremes. We have a temperature swing of 175 degrees in good old Minnesota. Huh?
Right.
Mark Seeley, you're going to be in at Farm Fest, aren't you, coming
We've
up
We've got Farm Fest coming up out in Morgan, Minnesota. I'll be there August 5th and 6th, University of Minnesota Extension. We'll be present throughout the week. We'll be doing some special broadcasts and forums out there on agriculture, the agricultural economy, all kinds of issues related to agriculture. So if you're out in southwestern Minnesota the first week of August, we'd welcome you to come by Farm Fest.
Come by and say hello to Mark Seeley and all the friends down there. That'll be great, huh, Mark?
Absolutely.
Any parting thoughts about the weather, my man?
I think the summer so far, despite these storms we've talked about recently, Stan, I think the summer so far has been, for the most part, kind to us, and I expect that the month of August will, for the most part, be a kind month to us. So continue to enjoy the summer season. Get out there and enjoy all of the outdoors that Minnesota has to offer.
Mark Seeley, you are always kind to us and everybody. Thank you for what you do, for who you are. You are the best. Thank you, my friend.
Thanks, Stan.
Okay, thank you, everybody. Enjoy the weather. Going to be a nicer day tomorrow, too. The humidity will not be quite as vexatious as it has been, so a nice day tomorrow for sure. Not a bad one today, either. Thank you so much, Stan Turner here. Kyle, thank you. And please join us for the All Request and Dedication program here on Club 1220 KLBB at noon on Monday. Bye-bye.